This is a production from the Yak Podcasting Network. The home for your growing sonic map of local voices united in their commitment to the best in podcasting.
And now, a yak.
Yak!
Yak! Opening day for the Texas Longhorns college baseball season is just a few days away. Hello again. Welcome back to the latest installment of the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com. I'm Dustin McComas from orangebloods.com, and apologies for the brief hiatus. Like many people this time of year, there's always a point in about January, February where it's either a cold or, you know, worst case scenario, maybe the flu or a sinus infection or just some sort of general nagging illness that seems to get everybody at some point. Got me most recently, and I woke up at one point without a voice, which is rare for me. I can't recall many times in my life when I couldn't really speak, which I'm sure some people are like, oh, okay, good. You can, yeah, we don't have to listen to you for a little bit. But I didn't really have much of a voice for a couple of days. I didn't even really start feeling like myself. This probably started late Monday. I didn't start feeling like myself until about Friday afternoon and ended up just staying inside pretty much all week besides covering some stuff for work at Orange Bloods, the Cristel Conte Town Hall, basketball game, press availabilities, and so on. But I didn't even really leave my house except to get coffee over the weekend. So I'm back to feeling like myself. You can probably still hear it in my voice that I'm definitely still congested, which, sorry, it's just kind of the way it is right now for me, and I'm sure many other people out there, including some listeners. And if you hear any outside noise, I do these podcasts in, I guess, the technical, or not technical, but the fancy word for this is like a breakfast room. There's so many rooms in this house, but the breakfast room, it has a sliding patio door that overlooks or opens up to our backyard. And in Austin, it's the first day with like sunlight, sunny skies, clear skies that we've had in what feels like a week. So if I don't open the door and let my dog kind of come in and out as he pleases, he'll sit at the door and stare and just whine because he can look outside and he wants to be outside. So he's going back and forth. First time Austin's had some good weather in a long time. First installment of the Extra Bases podcast since, and it feels like so much has happened since the last installment when I talked to y'all about just the potentially unique pitching plan that Texas was going to use heading into the season. And we'll see how that plays out. Some news on that front today. The Texas baseball Twitter account tweeted out that it has its opening day starter, and it's not Blair Henley. It's Bryce Elder, sophomore right-hander Bryce Elder, who, if you've listened since episode one of the Extra Bases podcast, I've been very high on Bryce Elder. I liked him when he was a freshman, but when he was a freshman, he was basically just a cutter fastball guy, and he could kind of change the shape and the velocity of his cutter to kind of make it act like a different pitch at times. I thought that he was a much better strike thrower than maybe his numbers suggested. But in the fall, he had a really, really good fall. And it was clear that he was physically more mature. He was stronger. He was more confident. He was more sure of himself. And his stuff was different. Rather than, you know, having a cutter that kind of looks like a different pitch at times and a fastball, he was fastball, curveball, cutter, changeup. And four distinctly different pitches with distinctly different velocities and shapes and things like that. So he had a really good fall. I just went back and looked at my report on him from the San Jacinto scrimmage, where I think that he was the only pitcher to throw more than one inning in that game through two innings because he was just so sharp in the first inning. But even back in the fall, I mean, he was up to 93 with a lively fastball and throwing all four pitches for a strike. And he had that thumb issue where a comebacker basically split his thumb open, so they shut him down at the end of the fall. But he's picked up right where he left off in the fall. He's been really good in the preseason. He was the best pitcher that threw in the alumni game for Texas, the recent alumni game, which about a week and a half ago. Again, it's been so long since I've done one of these, and I apologize again. It's just I physically could not do a podcast last week. So Elder, I think, was probably the star of the alumni game. definitely on the mound. He ended up throwing 3 2/3 innings, shutout innings, only gave up one hit, struck out five guys, didn't walk anybody. A fastball was up to 93 miles an hour, mixed in the cutter, changeup, and curve, threw all four pitches for strikes, got swings and misses on multiple pitches, really commanded the fastball well, pitched ahead, great tempo, just a good presence on the mound. I mean, it's just when he gets in his groove and he works quickly and he just pounds the zone with strikes with any pitch, and it's not even like he breaks a sweat out there when he's really got it going on. So, you know, even David Pierce said after that time, like, that's a guy that looks like a potential Friday starter. And I think a lot of people just assumed it'd be Blair Henley, and I've raised, you know, my cautions with Henley from the fall and in the preseason just about how the fastball plays and can he execute enough to capitalize when he's ahead of guys and limit the walks. And, you know, he had kind of like a Henley outing in the alumni game. He pitched two innings, gave up two runs on two hits, two walks, and struck out two. So there were some really good moments. There were some not so good moments. There were some okay moments. But meanwhile, Elder was really, really good. He was really good in the fall. So I'm not too surprised that he was named the starter. I mean, David Pierce doesn't just hand these things to guys. These are situations that have to be earned. And Bryce Elder has been Texas's best starting pitcher in the fall, the best starting pitcher in the preseason, and now he's going to have a chance to prove it when the season begins by stepping on the rubber as Texas Friday night starter. And if you think about, go back to his recruitment, he was a really late add, a guy that made some waves. I think when the playoffs started, he started to turn some heads. I remember talking to a couple of scouts about him that felt he was an under-the-radar guy that had a really good cutter and could develop into a really quality pitcher in college. And I give Texas a lot of credit for going out and finding him and projecting him moving forward, because he was like a – I remember he showed up in the fall and he was like 85, 86 and throwing a bunch of cutters in the low 80s. And I think people are kind of thinking, you know, this might have been a reach. But you could see that once the body matured, once he got stronger, you could see that he had a feel for strike throwing. He had a feel for manipulating the baseball. He had a feel for spinning the baseball. That it was a matter of time before, at worst, that guy was going to be a key piece as a strike throwing reliever. One of those guys you can depend on to come into the game, throw strikes, and maybe give you a couple innings. So he's blossomed into more than that. I think that he has, of all the pitchers that could be a starting pitcher on this year's roster, not long-term, because I think guys like Coy Cobb and Ty Madden have a higher ceiling long-term, but I think for the 2019 Longhorns, I think that Bryce Elder has the highest potential of any starting pitcher. So he's going to get the nod Friday on the road at Louisiana Lafayette. He will be Texas opening day starter. So he was one of the guys that I identified as potentially capable of getting deep into games. You know, Texas didn't have many of those starting pitchers that are capable of throwing into the sixth, seventh, maybe even the eighth inning. You know, Henley's capable of doing it. Elder's capable of doing it just because of the strike throwing element to what he does. And I put Mateo Boki in there as well, just because when we last saw him, he was really good in the Big 12 tournament. He was even better against Tennessee Tech in the Super Regional game where he pitched five innings. So he's potentially one of those guys that could work deep into games as well. But other than that, you get a lot of short stint guys, I think. A lot of guys that could be long relief, short relief, you know, maybe in that midweek starter type role where you just get, you know, the most you can out of the guy. If he gets to the fifth inning, great, and you just piece it together from there. But Elder is one of those guys because he does throw strikes so often that he is a candidate to get deep into games. So at least that's what we know about the lineup right now, at least for the starting pitcher, is that Bryce Elder is going to be that guy. And I'll get into the lineup projection right now. If at orangebuzz.com today I posted what I think the infield is going to look like from a projection standpoint. Last week I did the outfield. And we'll go back to the alumni game because I thought the starting lineup that David Pierce used was very telling. I honestly think that it's got a chance to be the opening day starting lineup. So Duke Ellis played center and led off. Eric Kennedy hit second and played in left field. Austin Todd hit third, played in right field. Zach Zubia was the DH. Tate Shaw was at first base, which was a bit of a surprise. We'll get into that more. Mason Hibler at second base, Ryan Reynolds at third base, Michael McCann at catcher, and Bryce Regan at shortstop. Not too many surprises, although the Shaw thing was, I think, raised some eyebrows because he's an outfielder. And then you see him over there at first base, and it's like, okay, like, well, what's this experiment element going on here? And we've talked about Eric Kennedy a lot on the Extra Bases podcast because he was so good in the fall. And it's just like, golly, this guy's been one of our best hitters. And then with freshmen, you're sometimes like, okay, let's see if this translates. Let's see if this translates into the preseason. And then when you get into game-type settings, does it translate as well? Well, all Eric Kennedy has done is hit over and over and over again. He gets on base. He's hitting for average. He took Connor Mays deep in the alumni game, hit a line drive out to right field. He's got some pop. Even though he's not very tall, he's very strong. I mean, he's the son of I think that his dad is still the strength and conditioning coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but has a big background in strength and conditioning. And if you remember his older brothers, Ben didn't play much at Texas, but Nick Kennedy, who pitched, Nick was a specimen for a pitcher. Really strong, not quite as, I don't think Eric Kennedy's bulky, but he's definitely a little thicker in terms of muscle. But Kennedy was a really strong guy on the mound, and it showed in the velocity in his delivery and things like that. So all Kennedy has done is hit, and they can't keep him out of the lineup. I mean, that's basically what David Pierce said. We're Tate Shaw's a realistic candidate at first base because Eric Kennedy's been so good. I got to play Eric Kennedy is basically what Pierce has said. So he was in there at left field, and I think that if you look at the outfield that was used for that alumni game, I think that that's your outfield. We know Duke Ellis was very, very, very likely to be the everyday center fielder and a guy that hits near the top of the order, especially after what he did last season. We knew that if Austin Todd was fully healthy, which he's been, and knock on wood, because he's so talented, and he's a really likable guy. I love his approach. He's kind of got that edge to him, like really super competitive. Like he's going to get in the box and he wants to fight the pitcher. He's got a lot of confidence about him, but he's a very talented player. I mean, people forget that he was poised before his sophomore season to have a real breakout season. He had a really, really good fall. Second game of the season, he hit a walk-off homer against Louisiana Lafayette, excuse me. He hit a walk-off homer. He's a guy that across the board, you look at his tools, and I think he's average or better in all the areas. Hitting for power, running, defense, and throwing. He is somebody that's very well-rounded. But the thing was just he was never healthy his sophomore year. He had that really weird thumb issue with, I believe it was either a ligament or a tendon in his thumb, to where the way he was gripping the bat and swinging it, it kept just kind of tearing that. So they had to like let that heal and figure that out. And then as he's coming back, he has the shoulder injury, which I believe was in the TCU series, where he basically, I think, separated his shoulder. So they had to deal with that. And he just couldn't be healthy. I mean, he was finally getting back into form in the College World Series and late in the postseason. So they really didn't have him at all last year. And here's the guy that I think a lot of people forget was probably a lot of people's pick to be the best hitter on the team before Cody Clemens just really emerged as a guy that realized all his talent and had a terrific All-American type season. So Austin Todd is capable of being this team's best hitter. Heck, he's capable of being this team's best position player. And I wasn't surprised to see that he was in there in the three-hole playing right field, because if he's healthy, he needs to be in the lineup every single day. And if Eric Kennedy continues to do what he's done, he needs to be in the lineup every single day. And we know Duke Ellis is going to be a guy that's probably going to be in the lineup every single day. So the outfield really, as crowded as it is in terms of options, because I think, you know, I mentioned Tate Shaw, Cam Fields had a pretty strong fall, although I think more of his future is on the mound than as a position player. Chase Roberts was the guy, an incoming freshman that a lot of people were high on in the outfield. We know that Mason Hibler played left field so well when he kind of made that his home eventually later last season. So Texas had all these outfield options, but now it's like, well, it's kind of all figured out. So you've got some of these other guys that I think Texas wants to try to work into the lineup somewhere. Shaw played first base. I personally, and this is nothing against him. I mean, he's an outfielder. I think that the first base thing is just kind of forcing something to happen that doesn't need to happen. He's athletic. He's a veteran. I mean, he's a fifth-year senior. He's been around baseball a lot. But he's so new to first base, and I just don't know what you're getting from him at that position that somebody else couldn't provide. He hits righties kind of well. He doesn't hit lefties. So you're talking about maybe a platoon-type approach over there. I just think that Pierce seems determined to get him in the lineup because of his presence and because he's a fifth-year senior that's got a lot of experience, and I think they really like the way that he approaches the game, the hard-nosed way that he approaches the game. But I just think they have too many options over there to try to force this. I mean, there's nothing wrong with having a guy like Tate Shaw as a platoon-type player or a pinch runner late or a defensive sub late or a pinch hitter late or a spot start guy here or there. As last season showed, it's a long season. There's going to be points in the season where your depth is really tested. So I don't know. We'll see how that plays out. But he's a real option at first base, which was made clear by him starting there in the alumni game and also by Pierce's comments afterward. I think that one thing that will affect that position is what happened to catcher, which Michael McCann started at catcher. DJ Petrinski still has this shoulder issue, and it just seems like it's lingering. He didn't catch much at all in the fall. They just rested him. He didn't catch in the alumni game. It's not bothersome enough to where it would prevent him from playing first base. So let's say this thing lingers into the season and it's just not quite where it needs to be. I mean, you think about how many times the catcher throws the ball back to the pitcher, how many times he's thrown the ball down to second base, all those things. It is a lot of, you know, it can be a lot of stress on the shoulder. So if that sort of thing is still lingering into the season, which, I mean, the alumni game was only, what, 10 days ago? So, you know, perhaps that thing's not going to be 100% when the season begins. I think that you'll see Petrinski at first base because they have to have his bat in the lineup. They can't have a lineup that doesn't include his bat in there. And with Zach Zubia being the DH, another guy that needs to be in the lineup every day, that situation to me is one that where you need DJ Petrinski at first base. So in order to keep his bat in the lineup. So McCann catching was pretty telling. I don't want to sound any alarms or make it seem like a long-term deal. I think eventually DJ Petrinski's going to catch a lot. But this is a luxury for Texas, and from the standpoint it has two senior catchers, two very, very respected senior catchers, two guys with a lot of experience. Players have sung their praises. David Pierce has pointed out how much of a help it is to have those guys around a young pitching staff. So it's very important that Texas has a guy in McCann that could step in there and really give you the same type of presence behind the plate. Not the same type of presence with the bat, but can give you the same type of presence behind the plate as a leader. And that's ultimately what's most important about that position. You hope, ideally, you've got a guy that can swing it too. And McCann can. Well, how about that, Dustin? McCann does provide something offensively. But really, that position, especially for this team with such a young pitching staff, and I think a pitching staff that's going to include so many guys that pitch, it's important to have that sort of presence behind there, and that's what McCann provides. I mean, the guy is really respected. Pierce is throwing around the phrase self-made with him, which I think is a very high compliment from the standpoint of he's basically turned himself into what he is, which is a guy that's capable of catching innings at the University of Texas, which I think says a lot about his work ethic and his demeanor. And it is a guy that I think a lot of players respect. So, again, you're listening to the Extra Bases podcast on theyak.com, episode 25. I'm Dustin McComas of orangebloods.com, trying to get you all caught up on everything that's happened with Texas baseball recently. Since the last time we did one of these podcasts, which seems like it was forever ago because it was before the alumni game, which, I mean, seems like it was like a month ago, but really it wasn't that far ago. So going through the lineup from the alumni game, which to me I think is going to be a really good projection of what the lineup's going to be when the season begins on Friday. The shortstop deal I know has gotten a lot of attention because, you know, David Hamilton's injury opened up a hole at shortstop. I thought it was a great sign for Texas that it was Bryce Regan out there. And that's not because I'm down on Mason Hibler. It's because I think that Bryce Regan at shortstop gives Texas the best chance to have its best lineup on the field. People forget Mason Hibler came here as a shortstop from Odessa College, but also he opened last season hitting second in the lineup and playing second base. And he probably would have played second base a lot of the year if Cody Clemens didn't have some issues at third base and needed to move to second base, where it was a more natural fit for a guy that played shortstop in high school. So Hibler, I think, could fit second base really well. I think that duo gives Texas its best defense up the middle with shortstop, center field, second, and catcher. That to me is you know, Reagan needs to win that job because let's say that, you know, for some reason something happens with somebody else in a lineup. Well, you can move Hibler all over the place. He could play third. He could play second. He could play first. He could play left. Heck, I think he could probably play center and right as well. So his versatility is a big strength. I think ideally Texas is hoping that they can put him at second base and leave him there and just have that group grow together throughout the year. But his versatility is a big strength, and it would potentially allow Texas to mix and match and get its best lineup on the field. You don't really have that same luxury with Reagan. I think that's a guy you need to put somewhere and leave him there, whether it's second base or shortstop. And I think by playing a freshman there and letting him grow into that position, it pays such dividends down the road. And really, there's probably not going to be that much of a difference between what Hibler could provide there and what Reagan provides. It comes down to, can you find somebody that can make the routine play at a pretty consistent rate? And then can you have somebody that his talent shows in the batter's box? And I think Reagan's talent will show. He's a freshman, so there are going to be a lot of ups and downs with him on both parts of the game, both defensively and offensively. But I think Texas is hoping that as he's getting more comfortable playing there at this level, there will be more consistency with the glove, and then that he has enough talent offensively to provide something there. But really, I think that's Texas' best lineup, is when Hibler's at second, Reagan's at short. Could Lance Ford push Hibler for that job at second? He had a really good fall. He had a great alumni game, although David Pierce said that he kind of scuffled some in the week prior to that alumni game, but maybe he's just one of those gamer guys that, you know, when the lights come on, he elevates his game and performs. I think that's a big if. I think right now Lance Ford is probably destined to be a situational guy, pinch hitter, maybe a platoon starter here or there. I think that job at second base is probably Mason Hibler's, unless something happens with Reagan where he just can't handle it defensively, and then they have to shuffle things around. Or maybe, you know, there's an injury here or there, or something happens where they try to tinker with Hibler somewhere else. But I think second base is Hibler's home. I think Texas' best lineup is when Bryce Reagan is in there at shortstop. Other than that, not a whole lot of surprises. I mean, it's the lineup has kind of figured itself out. You know, we mentioned first base. We mentioned DH. The outfield seems really solidified, especially if Kennedy keeps doing what he's doing and Todd stays healthy. You know, if Reagan just gives some sort of average presence consistently, I think he's going to be the shortstop. I think that's going to keep Hibler at second base. But Pierce did mention, and this is absolutely true, he said that we have about 12 to 14 hitters that are still really in the mix. And you got a guy in Sam Bertelsen who hit an absolute freaking bomb in the alumni game. Hit it off Blair Henley. I mean, it's one of the farthest hit balls I've seen at UFCU Dishwalk Field to right center. It basically bounced. It landed in Comal Street and bounced a couple of times and basically went up near the softball stadium over there. So if you've ever been to Dishwalk Field, you know that thing is a drive. He's got some big-time pop. He's got also has the ability to play third base and first base at an average or better level defensively. The only issue that's been for Bertelsen is that he's swung the bats really well in scrimmages and in practices, but it hasn't quite translated to games yet. So I think there's going to be a point in time where he's and it might be early on, he's going to get an opportunity to get in there, whether it's that third or first or maybe a platoon DH type situation. and swing the bat some and see if the, he can prove that he needs to be in the lineup every single day. But he's a guy I think that I would keep an eye on. I mentioned Ford. I mentioned Chase Roberts, although it seems like he's kind of out of the mix right now. Mentioned Cam Fields, who swung the bat well in the fall, but with the way the outfield's looking right now, I think that they might just allow him to focus a lot on being a pitcher. Although I think the idea of maybe him platooning, I don't with Eric Kennedy, maybe getting another right-handed bat in there against lefties, it might be something they look into. They've got a lot of left-right options, which to me is really interesting because I think that if they wanted to take a platoon type approach, they could really do that. And you're thinking, oh, yeah, get all the lefty bats in there against righties and all the righty bats in there against lefties. The one downside to that, though, is you don't let some of those players get into an everyday rhythm. And I think that that's important for guys, especially for young players. But Pierce said they've got 12 to 14 guys hitting-wise that are in there in mix. Peter Gabe, who limped his way around the bases some for a triple, David Pierce has said that he had a knee issue in the fall that's still kind of lingering. But I really liked him in the fall swinging the bat. He got some time over at first base. Probably not a guy that's going to factor into the mix immediately, but that's somebody that could potentially hit his way into some at bats down the road. So it looks like the position player part of the lineup is taking shape. Pitching wise, we know who the opening day starter is going to be. I already mentioned Elder. I would be very surprised if Blair Hindley is not the Saturday guy beyond him. What happens Sunday? I'm not really sure. You know, last episode of the Extra Bases podcast, we just went into detail about all the different things Texas could do with its pitching plan, and that's what that sounds like the type of plan David Pierce wants to take is, I mean, he knows that he only has a couple of guys that have any type of starting experience, and only, you know, one guy expected to contribute majorly that threw 50 or more innings at Texas. So he knows he's got a lot of experience, but he knows he has a lot of talent. He knows he has a lot of depth, and I think that he's going to try to use that to his advantage. So I don't know what that means for the rest of the rotation. I don't know what that means for how the bullpen shakes itself out. I just think that we're going to see a lot of pitchers throw in the month of February, and then, you know, guys are just going to start to figure out their roles by the way they perform on the field. And they're going to need a lot of arms. You know, in the early part of the season, you're playing a lot of games. There's some games where you're playing, you know, Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday series with a midweek game. There's some weeks where you've got a Tuesday, Wednesday midweek, and then a Friday, Saturday, Sunday series. There's some series we've got a doubleheader on Saturday. So you need a lot of arms. I mean, the depth of the pitching staff really does get tested early on. So I would just treat the pitching staff as, hey, we'll see what happens, but understand that there are going to be a lot of guys that throw. And I think that that's exciting. We saw some, you know, the only two freshmen that pitched the alumni game, Mason Bryant basically loaded the bases and struck out three guys. I mean, his stuff, it's just nothing is straight. I mean, it's a lot of fun to watch, except for those times when he's not throwing strikes. And the Owen Meany had a scoreless frame getting there as well. So, you know, redshirt freshman Cole Quintanilla, and then I haven't even, you know, we didn't even see Ty Madden and Coy Cobb and Jack Dealing and those guys because they probably threw in scrimmages earlier that week before the alumni game. So we're going to see a lot of guys throw. And I just think that beyond the first Friday starter of the season and probably Blair Hindley starting a game at some point, I think everything is just up in the air. And it's going to be decided by who really capitalizes on their chances and proves that they can throw strikes and execute pitches, which is, it's such a new thing for young pitchers. They're not quite used to, hey, I can't just rear back and throw 93 down the plate because that's going to get everybody that Texas plays on its schedule is going to hit that. It's just the way it is. So those young guys really have to learn and understand how to control their breathing in this environment, how to, you know, know the bunt coverages, how to hold runners, how to communicate with your catcher, how to execute your pitches, how to, you know, channel your adrenaline, how to, you know, control your effort, how to repeat your delivery. There's all of these things that get elevated when you step up to the collegiate level that you can sometimes get away with at the high school level because your stuff is so good. So I'm excited to see all those guys pitch, though. I think that we're going to get a look at so many of those guys early on, and it's going to be fun to watch, you know, just the stuff that these guys have and the velocity. and see which guys kind of rise to the top and really establish themselves as key pieces for this 2019 team. And with that, we will wrap up this edition of the Extra Bases Podcast on theyak.com, episode 25. I'm Dustin McCombs of orangebloods.com. We went all Longhorns today. We had to. There's been so much that's happened since the last time I did one of these. I wanted to be very Texas heavy with this podcast, even though there are some things in Major League Baseball that I'd like to talk about at some point. That might be on the next installment. You know, free agency is really weird right now, which I've talked about in the past. It continues to be really weird, and I think it's raising a lot of eyebrows across baseball. You know, I think Jeff Passan wrote about how a lot of people view the free agency system as being broke. So that's something that we'll probably explore on one of the next podcasts. And plus, pitchers and catchers are reporting. I think the pitchers and catchers for the Oakland A's were the first team that reported. And by the way, I mean, the Kyler Murray thing, oh, he came out and said that he's going to focus entirely on football. So the Oakland A's don't get that pick back. It is gone. Yeah, they can have the rights to Kyler Murray, but they do not get that pick back. So they basically wasted their first round pick, a top 10 pick overall. And I saw a couple of people tweet out, oh, you know, the A's didn't make a mistake. It's just, you know, the circumstances of the situation changed, and how are they going to know that? Which I call bullshit on, because it's such a big part of scouting is really figuring out the makeup of a kid, especially a guy that you're going to spend a first round pick on. You need to know that dude inside and out. You need to know his family. You need to know his friends. You need to know his girlfriend if he has one, or whomever it is, or fiance, wife, whatever. You got to know these dudes inside and out. You know, I speak from experience. I mean, I've been an associate or part-time scout for 6 years. I'm not calling myself a scout, but I've worked pretty closely with those guys and built up some relationships over the years and really had a pretty unique view into how all this stuff works. And I know that makeup is just such a big part of building a profile on these prospects, especially the types of ones that you're going to use a first-round pick on. I mean, this is a guy that the GM is going inside his home. The GM is going to watch him play. The GM doesn't go watch many guys play. Usually if a GM is showing up to your game, it means you're a first-round guy or second-round guy. He doesn't show up to see many third-, fourth-round guys. So the makeup part is such a big deal about when, you know, these teams are making these picks and building these profiles on guys. And everybody that's ever been around Kyler Murray knew that he loved football, loved it. He loved football when he was in high school, when he could have been a first-round pick out of high school and been a millionaire then. He's always loved football more than baseball. He's always been that type of guy that loves football and likes baseball. He likes baseball. I don't think he loves baseball. I think part of the reason why he plays baseball because he's competitive and he's really good at it. But his first love is football. It always has been. And if you're going to use a first-round pick on that type of guy, you have to understand that there's a lot of risk involved with that. And I just don't buy the idea that the A's didn't make a mistake. It's a mistake. They took a first-round pick on a guy, and they don't even get compensation back for it. At least when teams, you know, the Dodgers took JT Ginn in the back end of the first round this past draft. He didn't sign. He went to Mississippi State. Well, they get the pick back. Okay, at least they get that pick back next year. So there's not as much risk in taking a guy that could potentially go play football, and then you're left with nothing for a top 10 overall pick. I mean, that's, you're supposed to draft a guy that could immediately become one of the top 100 prospects in baseball and immediately become one of the best prospects in your system. And if you're taking a college guy, you're betting on that guy getting through the minor league levels pretty quick and impacting your club in a few years. And the A's waste that pick. So, you know, spare me the idea this isn't a mistake. It's a mistake. You know, I saw Bristol Olney tweet out, it'll context change. Kyler Murray was a high school All-American quarterback who is arguably the best, most decorated Texas high school quarterback ever. Think about that for a second. Texas high school football, more tradition than any state in the United States when it comes to high school football. And that guy might be the best Texas high school quarterback ever. And you're trying to tell me that you didn't think there was a chance that at Oklahoma, who just produced Baker Mayfield as a Heisman winner and the number one overall pick, You didn't think there was a chance that that guy that was a high school All-American and that was an incredible player as a high school quarterback, that that guy might not be good at football, might not be good enough to go to the NFL and chase the dream that he loves more than baseball? Come on now. That's ridiculous. I think that the idea that this isn't a mistake by the A's, I think, is just trying to cover up for a baseball organization. They made a mistake. They don't get that pick back. They use a pick on a guy that loves football more than he likes baseball. Bottom line. And if, you know, and Kyler Murray's a different dude too. His dad is a different dude too. They're not the easiest people to deal with. You know, Kyler showed up late to his high school announcement for his signing day deal and said he was late because he was on Kyler time. Yeah, you talk to people that have been around him at both Texas A&M and OU, and the opinions are varied. He's just a different type of guy. And his dad is a different type of guy to deal with. And anybody that works in scouting in baseball would have had to have understood that makeup situation very, very, very early on. So I'm sorry, I just don't buy the idea that the Oakland A's didn't make a mistake by selecting Kyler Murray. They absolutely made a mistake. Their first-round pick is going on to the NFL and not playing baseball. They're not going to get compensation for that pick back. So to me, that's an error. And to me, that's something that when you're assessing risk is a big, big, big part of draft day for Major League Baseball. And I know a few organizations that had Kyler Murray as basically a second-round pick with risk because they didn't know what was going to happen with football. So not only did Oakland maybe overdraft on the talent relative to their peers in the industry, but they also took a guy that had risk tagged to him because of the football element. So I just think that that's a mistake. And I think the idea that you know, trying to take up for Oakland and cover what is going to go down as, you know, a mistake and a wasted first-round pick is just wrong. It's just wrong. So let's end on that rant. I've got it out of my system, I think, for the most part. I just saw some things written in on Twitter, and I'm just like, really? Like, I think if you take a guy in the first round and he doesn't sign and you don't even get compensation for that pick, that's probably a mistake, especially when it's Kyler Murray, especially when you know the personality attached to that and the love of football attached to that as well. So that's it. I'm done. I'm done ranting. Episode 25 of the Extra Bases Podcast is in the book. I apologize for my brief hiatus away from podcasting, but I am back. College baseball is back. The season begins on Friday. So we'll be coming at you hot and heavy during the baseball season with all your Extra Bases Podcasts, all your Texas Longhorns baseball needs, college baseball, pro baseball, hell, fantasy baseball, if I can squeeze in a lot of baseball. Going to be a lot of Extra Bases Podcasts. So thank you for listening. Get to theyak.com/Austin. Take advantage of all our great podcast content. Again, I'm Dustin McComas of OrangeBloods.com. You can follow me on Twitter, dmccomasob, dmccomasob on Twitter. Follow me. Stay in touch with all the Texas baseball news, all my thoughts about anything baseball related. But other than that, take care. Have a good week. And we will talk again once college baseball season is officially here. Thank you for listening.